Chapter 92. Think you could have carried it off so? Mr. Watkins Tuttle was proceeding to demonstrate that the Richardsonian principle was the best on which love could possibly be made, when he was interrupted by the entrance of Martha, with a little pink note folded like a fancy cocked hat. Miss Lillerton's compliments, said Martha, as she delivered it into Tuttle's hands, and vanished. Do you observe the delicacy? Said Tuttle, appealing to Mr. Gabriel Parsons. Compliments, not love, by the servant, eh? Mr. Gabriel Parsons didn't exactly know what reply to make, so he poked the forefinger of his right hand between the third and fourth ribs of Mr. Watkins Tuttle. Come, said Watkins, when the explosion of mirth, consequent on this practical jest, had subsided, we'll be off at once, let's lose no time. Echoed Gabriel Parsons. And in 5 minutes they were at the garden gate of the villa tenanted by the uncle of Mr. Timpson. Is Mr. Charles Timpson at home? Inquired Mr. Watkins Tuttle of Mr. Charles Timpson's uncle's man. Mr. Charles is at home, replied the man, stammering, but he desired me to say he couldn't be interrupted, sir, by any of the parishioners. I am not a parishioner, replied Watkins. Is Mr. Charles writing a sermon, Tom? Inquired Parsons, thrusting himself forward. No, Mr. Parsons, sir, he's not exactly writing a sermon, but he is practicing the violoncello in his own bedroom, and gave strict orders not to be disturbed. Say I'm here, replied Gabriel, leading the way across the garden. Mr. Parsons and Mr. Tuttle, on private and particular business. They were shown into the parlor, and the servant departed to deliver his message. The distant groaning of the violoncello ceased, footsteps were heard on the stairs, and Mr. Timpson presented himself, and shook hands with Parsons with the utmost cordiality. How do you do, sir? Said Watkins Tuttle, with great solemnity. How do you do, sir? Replied Timpson, with as much coldness, as if it were a matter of perfect indifference to him how he did, as it very likely was. I beg to deliver this note to you, said Watkins Tuttle, producing the cocked hat. From Miss Lillerton. Said Timpson, suddenly changing color. Pray sit down. Mr. Watkins Tuttle sat down, and while Timpson perused the note, fixed his eyes on an oyster sauce colored portrait of the Archbishop of Canterbury, which hung over the fireplace. Mr. Timpson rose from his seat, when he had concluded the note, and looked dubiously at Parsons. May I ask, he inquired, appealing to Watkins Tuttle, whether our friend here is acquainted with the object of your visit? Our friend is in my confidence, replied Watkins, with considerable importance. Then, sir, said Timpson, seizing both Tuttle's hands, allow me in his presence, to thank you most unfeignedly and cordially, for the noble part you have acted in this affair. He thinks I recommended him, thought Tuttle. Confound these fellows. They never think of anything but their fees. I deeply regret having misunderstood your intentions, my dear sir, continued Timpson. Disinterested and manly, indeed. There are very few men who would have acted as you have done. Mr. Watkins Tuttle could not help thinking that this last remark was anything but complimentary. He therefore inquired, rather hastily, when is it to be? On Thursday, replied Timpson, on Thursday morning at 8:30. Uncommonly early, observed Watkins Tuttle, with an air of triumphant self-denial. I shall hardly be able to get down here by that hour. This was intended for a joke. Never mind, My dear fellow, apostrophe replied Timson, all suavity, shaking hands with Toddle again most heartily, so long as we see you to breakfast, you know apostrophe, eh? Apostrophe, said Parsons, with one of the most extraordinary expressions of countenance that ever appeared in a human face. What? Apostrophe, ejaculated Watkins Toddle, at the same moment. I say that so long as we see you to breakfast, apostrophe replied Timson, we will excuse your being absent from the ceremony, though of course your presence at it would give us the utmost pleasure. Apostrophe, Mr. Watkins Toddle staggered against the wall, and fixed his eyes on Timson with appalling perseverance. Timson, apostrophe said Parsons, hurriedly brushing his hat with his left arm, when you say us, whom do you mean? Apostrophe, Mr. Timson looked foolish in his turn, when he replied, why Mrs. Timson, that will be this day week. Miss Lillerton, that is apostrophe, now don't stare at that idiot in the corner, apostrophe angrily exclaimed Parsons, as the extraordinary convulsions of Watkins Toddle's countenance excited the wondering gaze of Timson, but have the goodness to tell me in three words the contents of that note? Apostrophe, this note, apostrophe replied Timson, is from Miss Lillerton, to whom I have been for the last 5 weeks regularly engaged. Her singular scruples and strange feeling on some points have hitherto prevented my bringing the engagement to that termination which I so anxiously desire. She informs me here that she sounded Mrs. Parsons with the view of making her her confidant and go-between, that Mrs. Parsons informed this elderly gentleman, Mr. Toddle, of the circumstance, and that he, in the most kind and delicate terms, offered to assist us in any way, and even undertook to convey this note, which contains the promise I have long sought in vain, an act of kindness for which I can never be sufficiently grateful. Apostrophe, good night, Timson, apostrophe said Parsons, hurrying off, and carrying the bewildered Toddle with him. Won't you stay and have something? Apostrophe said Timson. No, thanky, apostrophe replied Parsons, I've had quite enough, and away he went, followed by Watkins Toddle in a state of stupefaction. Mr. Gabriel Parsons whistled until they had walked some quarter of a mile past his own gate, when he suddenly stopped, and said, you are a clever fellow, Toddle, ain't you? Apostrophe, I don't know, apostrophe said the unfortunate Watkins. I suppose you'll say this is Fanny's fault, won't you? Apostrophe inquired Gabriel. I don't know anything about it, apostrophe replied the bewildered Toddle. Well, apostrophe said Parsons, turning on his heel to go home, the next time you make an offer, you had better speak plainly, and don't throw a chance away. And the next time you're locked up in a sponging house, just wait there till I come and take you out, there's a good fellow. Apostrophe, how, or at what hour, Mr. Watkins Toddle returned to Cecil Street is unknown. His boots were seen outside his bedroom door next morning, but we have the authority of his landlady for stating that he neither emerged therefrom nor accepted sustenance for 24 hours. At the expiration of that period, and when a council of war was being held in the kitchen on the propriety of summoning the parochial beadle to break his door open, he rang his bell, and demanded a cup of milk and water. The next morning he went through the formalities of eating and drinking as usual, but a week afterwards he was seized with a relapse, while perusing the list of marriages in a morning paper, from which he never perfectly recovered. A few weeks after the last named occurrence, the body of a gentleman unknown was found in the Regent's Canal. In the trousers pockets were 4 shillings and 3 pence halfpenny, a matrimonial advertisement from a lady, which appeared to have been cut out of a Sunday paper, a toothpick, and a card case, which it is confidently believed would have led to the identification of the unfortunate gentleman, but for the circumstance of there being none but blank cards in it. Mr. Watkins Toddle absented himself from his lodgings shortly before. A bill, which has not been taken up, was presented next morning, and a bill, which has not been taken down, was soon afterwards affixed in his parlor window. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.